skeptic, yeah. I can't believe you believe in Batman. We disagree, but I still give a damn. Good morning, this is The Skeptical Experience with me, Richard Gobder here, and this week my guest, Robert Brotherton, who is researching into the psychology of belief and conspiracy theories from an anomalistic viewpoint, and where the factors involved in paranormal belief underlie the deep similarities within conspiracy beliefs. So basically, we're going to be talking conspiracies. Morning. Good morning, Rob.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, this is my first proper show. I'm having to juggle things, and if things go wrong, blame the technician, which
blame
is
the
awesome.
Conspiracy.
Blame the conspiracy, absolutely. It will be a conspiracy of the technician, who at the moment is me, being rubbish. Okay, tell me a bit about yourself.
Right. Well, my name's Rob, and I've been working here at Goldsmiths with the APRU, the Anomalistic Psychology Research Unit, for the last year and a half or so. And at the moment, like you said, I'm working on my PhD, which is into the psychology underlying conspiracy theory beliefs. And it really hasn't been researched much at all so far. And so what I'm trying to do here with the APRU is integrate research into belief in conspiracy theories into the wider field of anomalistic psychology. Because I think there's a lot of similarities between conspiracy theory beliefs and other more typical anomalistic beliefs, such as belief in ghosts or in psychics. And so that's what I'm doing with my PhD.
Okay, fantastic. Would you regard yourself as a general skeptic?
Yes, I would, definitely.
Have you always been one, or was there an epiphany moment?
Well, I was thinking about this, because I knew you were going to ask me, and
well,
I don't remember having any kind of like skeptical awakening moment, and that might just be because I have a horrendous memory. But I know, like, as far as when I was 16, 17, 18, I was still fairly credulous. I believed that there was some kind of, like, you know, guiding force in the universe and all kinds of strange ideas like that. But then by the time I finished my psychology undergrad, I was a complete skeptic. So I think studying psychology must have had a lot to do with that, because psychology in particular, it doesn't just teach you the scientific method, but it teaches you why we're fallible as humans, and so why we need the scientific method.
Do you think the element of critical thinking as well, do you think once you get that element of critical thinking, it's possible, as long as you actually pursue it, to not become skeptical? Do you think it's possible to be a critical thinker and credulous?
Well, it depends what you mean by critical thinker. I mean, research in conspiracy theories really points out that, like, a lot of the conspiracy theorists call themselves skeptics. You know, they think that they're the ones being skeptical. But I would argue that they're not. They're following a flawed line of logic and reasoning. So I think if you're truly critical, if you're truly skeptical, which means being open and following the evidence more than anything, I think that entails skepticism in all domains of life, really.
What made you think particularly about conspiracy theories?
It was kind of just I fell into it, to be honest. I was it was coming up to my third year undergrad project, and I was looking at the staff at the university where I was, University of Kent, and their research interests, and I was thinking about researching magical beliefs or false memories, that kind of thing. So related to anomalistic psychology. And I just happened to come across one of the lecturers there, Dr. Karen Douglas, whose main research interest is kind of language acquisition and language biases and stuff. But then on her staff profile, there was just a couple of sentences saying that she was doing this project into conspiracy theory belief. And I thought, wow, that sounds so interesting. So I got in touch with her, and I did my project with her concerning civic disengagement and belief in conspiracy theories, which was like, that was my start. And like, to be honest, it was, I didn't know anything about it at that point. I was just learning, but I found it so fascinating that I just decided to pursue it with my master's degree and then my PhD.
How would you then define a conspiracy theory?
Well, it's quite problematic, actually, because obviously there are real conspiracies. A conspiracy as defined by law is just two or more people acting together in secret to break the law. And this happens all the time, of course, like every day, things like drug smuggling and things like that. And then the rare case of like Watergate or the Tuskegee syphilis experiment, which were real conspiracies. But I think a conspiracy theory is something different. It's a psychologically distinct class of belief. And it's more than just the theory that a conspiracy took place. Because, mm-hmm. like, the official account of 9/11
yeah.
is a conspiracy theory in that sense, because it's proposing that these 19 hijackers conspired to mm-hmm. take over the planes and crash them. But conspiracy theory, as it's understood by, I would say, you know, the general population, and what I mean by conspiracy theory, is something more than that. There's some extra factors that make it a conspiracy theory. And these are things like, it always runs contrary to the official account of events. So it's saying that not only is the official version of events wrong, but that it's part of the conspiracy. It's disinformation that's been put out there by the conspirators to hide what they've done.
Right.
And another thing about conspiracy theory is that it tends to just bring in many, many disparate facts and pieces of evidence and just weave them together into the overall conspiracy narrative.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's what I mean when I say conspiracy theory.
Okay, what's the most unusual conspiracy theory you've heard about so far?
I have this wonderful book. I think it's just called Conspiracy.
Right.
By Kate Tuckett, I think. And there's kind of, there's the JFK and Watergate and all that kind of stuff. But it's mixed in with these just absurd, ridiculous, wonderful conspiracy theories. Like, there's one about this zebra at a zoo somewhere in America, I think. All the details are left unspecified, of course. But this zoo, they had one zebra, and it was like the pride of the zoo. Everyone just came to the zoo to see the zebra, essentially. Then one day, the zebra died. Like, first thing in the morning, before all the school kids arrived and everything. And the zoo workers are just distraught. They don't know what to do, because that's the pride of their zoo, you know. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they get one of their horses.
Right.
And they paint it white and black with stripes, just to look exactly like a zebra, and they stick it in the zebra enclosure, and it's fine. They pass this horse off as a zebra. They conspire to save their zoo. I think that's just ridiculous and lovely.
Painting horses. Oh, yes, yes, that's kind of bizarre. Well, you know, it keeps the children happy. There's nothing wrong with that kind
exactly.
of conspiracy.
Exactly. It's one of the few examples of a positive conspiracy.
Yes, rather than some of the ones around at the moment on 2012 and so on.
Yeah.
I'm going to sort of take an aside here. Speaking of 2012, as we weren't, I actually have this guy called Donald Yeoman from NASA, and I have a little recording of him talking about 2012, and then we'll move on to maybe talk about more general, the more better-known conspiracy theories.
Okay,
so this is Donald Yeoman of NASA.
I'm not expecting anything special in 2012 around December 21st. I'm not going to lay in any extra supplies, no survival gear. I'm just going to lay in an extra supply of eggnog for the coming holiday season. There's no planet Nibiru. There's no planet X, and nothing is hurtling toward us. But there have been claims on the internet that there is a planet called Nibiru, four times the size of the Earth, that's going to come close to the Earth or smack it in December of 2012. But there's no telescopic evidence. There's no evidence that it's perturbed any of the inner planets or the outer planets, which it would have to do if it were in an orbit around the Sun. And so there's no evidence whatsoever. And as Carl Sagan pointed out many times, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and there's no evidence whatsoever for Nibiru. The Mayan calendar does not end in 2012. They have terms that they use for long periods of time, much like we have terms for long periods of time, like a decade, a millennia. The Mayans had something called a long count, which was 5,125 years long. and that's what's coming to an end on December 21st, 2012. But a new long count begins on December 22nd, 2012, much like our own calendar ends on December 31st, and a new calendar for the next year begins on January 1. Regarding the solar maximum cycle, the sun has a period of solar activity that lasts about 11 years, so it is scheduled to reach a maximum around 2012, but it's been doing this for millennia. It reaches a solar maximum every 11 years or so for millennia, and there's no reason to suspect that this 2012 time period will be any different from the others. Now, as far as the Earth's magnetic field goes, there is, in historic time, pole reversals, north to south, south to north, but that sort of pole reversal of the Earth's magnetic field occurs on 400,000-year timescales, and it takes thousands of years for that change in polarity to take place. And there's no evidence whatsoever that it's going to start changing polarity in 2012, and even if it did, that wouldn't affect the rotation of the Earth, nor would it affect the rotation axis of the Earth. There are no planetary alignments in 2012. There won't be any planetary alignments for a couple of decades on either side of 2012, and even if there were, it wouldn't be in effect, because the only objects in space that materially affect the Earth's motion are the Sun and the Moon. Folks have to be very careful when they get information on the web, and that goes especially for objects that are in near-Earth space and are coming close to the Earth. We have a website called Asteroid Watch, which is backed with evidence and scientific method. If we put something out there, it's the truth. If you go to other websites and they're putting things out without evidence, without science, don't believe it. You have to be very careful where you go for your information. What if everything around you isn't
quite as it seems? So that's George Yeoman on the whole 2012 thing. 2012 is the hot topic of the moment as far as conspiracy theories go. Have you heard anything beyond stuff that George quite comprehensively covered then? I mean, there's so many different conspiracy theories out there as to why it's going to end that I think people have forgotten to question, is it going to end in a lot of these areas?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know that much about it. I tend to stay away from the kind of almost existential things like that, and I focus on like small groups of people up to no good, you know. And I don't think there's any theories that like the government are going to destroy the world in 2012 or anything like that, not that I know of.
There's theories that they know about it and they're going to save the chosen few.
Oh,
big
really?
Spaceships that are buried underground.
Well, maybe, who knows.
It could be. You say there's very little research being done. Has there been anything? Anything that you've gone, that's interesting?
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit. It's all kind of like the odd study here and there. There's no kind of focused body of research into it. But there are some findings like to do with personality, the kind of people who are likely to believe in conspiracy theories. And it tends to be people who are kind of lacking in interpersonal trust in all kinds of people, like the government and the police, but even friends and neighbors, and people who think the world is getting worse, and like even it's unfair to bring a child into the world because it's just everything is getting worse. And so that kind of person. And there's also some social factors, like extending from that, I think, people who are kind of marginalized or members of minority populations, they're much more likely to believe in conspiracy theories, especially theories directed against their own group. So there's been quite a bit of research into belief in kind of HIV/AIDS conspiracy theories.
Right.
You know, that it was created by the government and it's disseminated in order to destroy black people. And so black people tend to believe a lot more in those kind of theories.
Mm. And the whole vaccine thing. One thing I find interesting is that America seems to have taken off this anti-vac campaign. And even if you show them that the guy who kicked it off in Britain with the link between autism was absolutely discredited.
Mm. Yeah.
Is virtually not allowed, if you like, to set foot within the academic community of the UK. They still say, well, that was a conspiracy in its first place.
Yeah, exactly. There are diehard Andrew Wakefield supporters who hold him up as a hero, and they say that the medical establishment is just trying to keep him down for some reason, because he's seen as a crusader fighting back against the evil establishment.
Yes. It's kind of... do you think these people often have a misunderstanding or a mistrust, is probably a better word, of the scientific process? Possibly both.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is just this across-the-board cynicism towards any kind of authority or expert who is seen to be towing the party line.
Right. So, I mean, there are other conspiracy theories out there that aren't quite so government-based, but they're bigger in some way. I mean, I introduced you a while back to something that's an online phenomenon called True Force Loneliness, which is basically people who... Well, frankly, people who can't get laid blaming the Illuminati for programming attractive women to not be attracted to them in order to create eugenics and a perfect race. Mm. It does sound rather silly, but these people absolutely think it's happening. They don't think it's because they're not very nice people who don't look after themselves particularly and don't know how to speak to the other gender. So how do you have any idea how to get through to these people? Is there a way?
Well... I don't know if there's much you can do, to be honest. I think because belief in those kind of conspiracy theories is not based on reason or logic or evidence, it's not going to be affected by reason or logic or evidence. I think all you can do really is, well, in terms of governmental conspiracies at least, if there is just more transparency and more honesty and things like that, it might dissuade some conspiracy theorizing. But when it comes to things like the New World Order or the Illuminati, these kind of theories just entail such an absurdist worldview. Like, if this small group of people, the Illuminati or whoever it is, if they're capable of programming every woman to not want to be in a relationship with you, then they're capable of anything, you know?
Yeah.
And so if you believe that, then I don't know how you could be dissuaded from believing that. Because anyone, that's the other thing, anyone who would try to dissuade you could be an agent of the Illuminati.
Yeah, it's we were mentioning earlier before the show, I see links to millenarianism and eschatology and end of world theory, in that you've got the, if anyone dissuades you, it's the devil's trying to do it, and there's never a date for when this thing's going to happen. Well, 2012 aside, they've got a date. But, you know, there's been dates before, and if they do have a date and they hit it, there's an excuse. So, you know, in 1666, when the end of the world didn't come, well, maybe my maths wasn't so good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, do you think there is a, I don't want to say religious, but almost a religious element, the old argument that the faith is not an argument, it is a faith-based.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was Karl Popper who, he wrote about conspiracy theories, and he said they're the result of the secularization of the gods, or as belief in the gods subsides, we need something to replace that, and so we invent these all-powerful conspirators.
So they all, if you won't believe in God, you might believe in anything.
Yeah.
Does that mean there is a certain type of person who is, I suppose, cognitively more susceptible to belief, people who need belief, it's part of their makeup? And if so, how does that explain the rest of us who can dodge it?
Yeah, I think some of it stems from the need for control over your own life and the events that happen around you. And so if some shocking societal event happens and you think it's a random event or an accident, then that doesn't provide any comfort. In fact, it can be very unsettling. And so if you can explain it by saying, well, actually, someone was in control, someone made this happen, then it's, in a strange kind of way, it's reassuring. Even if you're not in control, at least someone is.
Yes, but at the same time, the thing that interests me is that you're also relinquishing control.
Yeah, that's...
Simultaneously, it's this weird...
Yeah, it's a kind of a paradox, especially because most conspiracy theories and most conspirators are seen to be just completely malicious and self-serving.
Yeah.
And so you're relinquishing control to that. I think another aspect of it is that if you think you know about this conspiracy theory, then you have this privileged knowledge.
Yeah.
And that makes you a little bit special and smarter than, you know, the sheeple.
Yes.
The believing masses, you know.
Those that don't wear the tin hats are the ones in problem. Yeah. Back to your own skepticism. Is there a particular skeptic that really stands out for you? Other than Chris, of course.
Of course. other than Chris, I would say my favourite skeptic, my favourite scientist, has to be Carl Sagan.
Okay, yeah.
Because I think his TV series Cosmos was one of the first kind of really scientific and skeptical shows that I watched, and it opened my eyes in a lot of ways, and it really showed that you can be a scientist and you can be a skeptic and you can explain reality and why certain people are misguided, but you can do it in such a caring, loving way that it doesn't have to be abrasive. You don't have to come off as a dick while you're doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And the other thing it showed me was just how all-encompassing science is. It's really, like, it's a way of life. It's not just a job, you know? The scope of that TV series in terms of content, it just covered everything. It showed how you can understand everything better by applying the scientific method.
Do you think it's... There are people who are very derogative... Get my teeth back in. Are very insulting of the scientific method, since that word won't come out of my mouth at the moment. What do you say to them? People who just say, oh, science is this and science is that.
Well, it's kind of hard to argue with, because like that kind of postmodernist worldview where there is no external reality, what can you say to people who believe that? Well, one thing you can say is, you know, if you can just believe whatever you want and that's as valid as anyone else's beliefs, then just step off a building and believe that you're not going to fall to your death.
Yeah.
Try that.
Yeah. And I think to me, postmodernism and that kind of thinking, the ultimate end is either nihilism or I'm a brain in a box, you know, becoming a solipsist and just...
Yeah.
And I don't personally see any relevance to that thinking. So, well, if I'm in a brain in a box, that brain in a box is experiencing this world. So the world that my brain in a box is experiencing, I'd kind of like to know about it. And also psychology. I'd like to know about what that brain in the box is doing with this brain that's in a skull. The whole conspiracy theory seems to be, to me, to be growing. Do you think that is it genuinely is getting more prevalent? Or do you think just the way we have modern media, the internet, email, has made it seem like it's growing? In other words, do you think modern media has caused it to grow, or do you think it's just the same but people can see these people more easily?
Yeah, I think to an extent it is a product of the internet and immediate communication and things like that. People with these strange beliefs are able to contact people with the same strange beliefs, and that reinforces those beliefs. But I think conspiracy theorizing genuinely is becoming more prevalent as well, just due to the fact that governments are becoming so much more complex and there's so much more ambiguity in life. One person cannot know how everything works, and yet we want to feel like we do. We want to have an explanation, and so a conspiracy theory kind of provides a false but reassuring explanation, a very simple explanation as well.
It's kind of a secular version of God of the Gaps.
Yeah, exactly.
That's interesting. I have this idea that it's that control thing. It's also, as you say, not... And this goes for a lot of things that we skeptics raise our eyebrows at. It comes to not wanting to be able to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
This fear of the unknown, to the point if you've got to know everything, even if you've got to shove a fairy tale in to explain it. Modern fairy tales, is that a way to describe conspiracy theories?
Yeah, that works. I like that.
Modern fairy tales. Especially the nice ones about horses being painted as zebras. That's a proper fairy tale.
Oh, well, the old fairy tales tended to be very bleak and grim as well, so I think there's a lot of parallels.
Do you think people believe the old fairy tales? I can tell you they did.
They did?
From my point of view, some of them, yeah. Some of them come from folk beliefs that were turned into stories. Some of them come from folk stories that were turned into stories. So, yeah, it's all under the same umbrella. Is there anything that specifically, other than its secularism and its base in without, if you like, superstition per se, is there anything else that really differentiates conspiracy theory from other, what you might call, anomalistic beliefs?
Well, yeah, conspiracy theories are slightly more problematic than, say, belief in psychic powers or belief in ghosts, because those beliefs, if they were true, would completely contradict everything we understand about physics.
Right.
And so that's a reasonable reason to be skeptical about them, just on the surface. Whereas conspiracy theories, there's nothing about them to say that they could not be true. Like, maybe people could, you know, conspire to bring about 9/11 or whatever. So you can't just dismiss them on the surface like that. But there are reasons, obviously, to be skeptical about them. Like, we understand that people just aren't that good at planning or executing these kind of conspiracies, and they're definitely not good at keeping them a secret. And so when you get to something like 9/11 or the moon landing hoax or most of these conspiracies, it would take hundreds if not thousands of people to be complicit. And we just, we know that people, that many people cannot keep that huge of a secret.
It's a strange twist in a way that these people don't trust anyone, but they believe that the people in the conspiracy have absolute trust in everybody else.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering how it is that they can believe such trust exists. And at the same time, believe there is no trust. You can't trust anybody and no one's trustworthy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Finally, I think of something interesting. It happens every decade or so. Yeah, I'm just... This whole is it trust the backbone of this, do you think? In some conspiracy theories, anyway. I mean, you were saying that people just don't trust the government and don't... But within the communities, is there this same kind of... Do you think there's the same kind of internal trust in each other? Or do you end up seeing subcultures break out even within conspiracy theories?
I think conspiracy theorists do tend to see the world in very black and white terms. So you've got this just across-the-board mistrust of any kind of expert or authority, but this complete trust in anyone who seems to be on your side. And so that's why people can so fervently support Andrew Wakefield, because he seems to be battling against the medical establishment. Or people in the States completely trust, you know, Jenny McCarthy, who argues against vaccinations as well, just because she's seen to be this figurehead who's crusading against the evil establishment.
Yes. Jenny McCarthy, well known for wearing very little on MTV and appearing in some soft porn movies, is a world expert on vaccines. It's strange who they will make their figureheads. I mean, I can kind of understand an ex-doctor, but an ex-porn actress. I don't know. Some people want to get an ex-beauty queen as their next president, but let's not go. Sorry about the pause, I'm thinking. Tell you what, we'll play your song.
Okay.
Well, I think now, you chose a song. What was the song?
It's called BBF3. It's by a band called Godspeed You Black Emperor. And basically it's just some very bleak, very beautiful music, along with a sample of the eccentric ramblings of a conspiracy theorist.
Okay, so we'll listen to that, and if you aren't awake yet, you will be.
I don't like the way country's red, don't you know? And that's pretty much what I was expressing in my poem. The American government, they're sneaky. They're very deceitful. They're the liars. They're cheats. They're ripoffs. I mean, the American government is one systematic government that nobody can trust. I don't trust them myself.
How long have you been writing?
Huh?
How long have you been writing?
Since I was four. I love coming here to an open mic, absolutely.
What kind of reactions do you usually get?
Usually people are pretty much in agreement with what I'm saying.
We overheard you before talk about you went to court today for a speeding ticket.
That's accurate.
Wait, do you want to tell us that story?
Yes, absolutely. I wouldn't mind telling you the story. I went to court today for a speeding ticket, and I told the judge, let me tell you something, and you listen good, I'm only going to say this one time and one time only, I don't repeat myself for nobody, I says, I'm here to pay a speeding ticket, not to listen to your lectures and hear you run your mouth for an hour. I says, I'm here to pay off my speeding ticket, and I'm here to get my fines out of the way and get the fuck to work. The judge says, you can't talk like that in my courtroom. You're in contempt of court. And I said, I told the judge, if that's the best you can do, I feel sorry for you. I said, why don't you just shut your fucking mouth for once and listen? I said, I'm not going to take your shit. I said, I'm going to pay my speeding ticket, like I said. I walk up with a goddamn bench and I hand him my $25 up and I says, there's my money. Now I am leaving. And I left it at that. Do a goddamn thing about it, because I'm expressing myself in your court and there is nothing you can do about it. You think you're God because you have a rope and you can put people up the goddamn river for 20 years? Well, you're not. America is a third world country and people don't recognize it. And I think that's pretty goddamn sad that they don't recognize their own country as a third world, third rate, third class slum.
That was Godspeed You Black Emperor with BBF3, and that was the choice of the week from my guest, Robert Brotherton. So, Rob, what's the danger?
Well, it seems like amongst those who don't believe in conspiracy theories, there's often the view that they're just kind of harmless and, you know, why should we care about them? And that people believe whatever strange things they want to, you know? But I would argue that conspiracy theories can have very real, very destructive and very widespread consequences, even for those who don't believe them. And so, like we were talking before about the anti-vaccination movement, which is based largely on conspiratorial thinking that, you know, the medical establishment is an evil capitalist conspiracy designed to keep us all sick so they can keep profiting off us. And so, like, it's actually influencing people's decisions as to whether or not they should vaccinate their children. And it's been estimated that hundreds, at least, if not thousands, of children have died from preventable illnesses that they just wouldn't have if they had been vaccinated. And the same is true of AIDS denialism conspiracies. Like, there's the idea that HIV does not cause AIDS. This is just a myth propagated by the medical establishment, and the treatments that they offer for AIDS are actually designed to keep people sick, if not kill them. And yes, these ideas aren't just held by, you know, people on the street. These were actually espoused by the one-time president of South Africa and his health minister, while a huge proportion of the population there was dying of AIDS.
Mm.
And I would say as well, even like if belief is not as widespread as in anti-vaccination or in AIDS, even if it's just one or two people holding like extreme anti-government conspiratorial ideas really, really fervently, and they decide to act on that, as was the case with Timothy McVeigh in the Oklahoma bombing. He killed hundreds of people, including a lot of children, because he was so vehemently anti-government, and he decided to act on that. And the same thing, apparently, recently with Jared Loughner.
Yeah.
He held these anti-government conspiracist views, and he acted on it, literally destroying people's lives.
Hmm. Do you... There's... Off the back of that recent shooting, there is what some people are calling conspiracy theory that it was set up by the Tea Party through suggestion.
Hmm.
Now, I can see that being an accident because of their rhetoric, that perhaps some people did get suggestive, you know, if they were open to it. But do you think it was actually on purpose?
Well, I mean, who knows? I have my suspicions that... Probably not. It just seems like another classic sign of conspiracy theorizing, which is overestimating the degree of intentionality in the world.
Mm.
Like, yeah, it's saying that these people intended for him to go and do exactly what he did.
Yeah.
That's really common with all conspiracy theories, is that they overestimate the degree to which the conspirators are able to plan and execute their plans perfectly.
Yeah.
And we know that in the real world that just doesn't happen. People cannot plan for every possible contingency. Things go wrong and secrets get revealed.
So was there a man behind the grassy knoll?
Most likely not.
Most likely not. I actually saw a TV program on Channel 4 that was called JFK The Shocking Truth, and it actually had this bizarre idea that JFK was shot by a lone gunman called Lee Harvey Oswald from the book repository, etc., etc. And it was just the way it was done, as if to say, this is a mad idea, when actually all the evidence does actually point to that.
Well, the thing about JFK conspiracy theories in particular is that they're just... That is the single most widely believed in conspiracy theory. Polls consistently show that about 60 to 70%, if not more, of the population endorse the idea that a conspiracy killed JFK, because it's just, it's so ubiquitous. It's the prototypical conspiracy theory. Everyone's heard it. And a lot of people just take it as fact that, yeah, there was a conspiracy.
Does it come back to this idea you were saying before, that sometimes people just can't... I suppose one way of putting it is people cannot accept that it's something so simple as one guy got a gun and killed someone so important, such a big figure.
Yeah, I mean, that idea, in a lot of ways, is just terrifying. That one guy can wake up one day and decide to change the world forever.
Yeah.
People don't like that kind of randomness in the world. That something so shocking, so world-changing can just happen.
So, there's also a link, perhaps, to people's misunderstanding of randomness and statistics. A kind of...
Yeah.
This misunderstanding of knowing how these things are possible.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with the limitations of our cognitive system, which hasn't been researched a lot so far, which is what I want to pursue mostly. But yeah, I think conspiracy theories might be a product of just the way we perceive and the way we reason about the world. Innately, we can't do anything about it. That's just how we think about things, and we have to actively try and suppress that and overcome it.
And try... do you think, if you don't want to go into your research because it's not been done or finalised or whatever. But do you think this information will help things, or do you think the conspiracy theories will stay conspiracy theories because of that faith-based element?
Yeah, I think most likely there is always going to be conspiracy theories, but hopefully shedding light on the kind of factors that can promote them might make some people think twice about it. Just making people aware of the ways that their reasoning can be flawed, I think, helps.
Yeah, I mean, myself with my burgeoning interest in witchcraft, the one thing at the moment that I find interesting is Uganda, where there is a massive conspiracy that witches are trying to take over the government. It is very... There are so many echoes to Europe of the 15th, 16th, 17th century. How would you go about, do you think, explain to these people that it's not real? That these children, I might add, that they're killing are not actually witches. They're just innocent children to whom they are creating a reality for, to explain what's going on. Do you think there's any way through? I mean, it's kind of the same question again, but I thought I'd rephrase it.
Yeah, well, I think in cases like that, it has a lot to do with the culture and how people are brought up, and maybe that's all they know. And so, I mean, perhaps the internet would help, just if people can be exposed to alternative ideas, and perhaps everyone is not a witch. Maybe they'll consider that. But if that's all you know, then maybe there's not much you can do about that.
Do you think there's also that kind of healthy idea that if you put what is going on, what the fallacies are, what the problems are, to a conspiracy theorist? The conspiracy theorist, you can pretty much predict, he's a gun out of hand, say you're part of the conspiracy, go away. But others around him, if he's on the internet, people who subscribe to him, people who comment with him, might just listen. So you're not actually you're aiming for the bullseye, but you're trying to hit the target around it.
Yeah.
Do you think that's...
Yeah,
valid?
Perhaps. I mean, there are certain people, of course, who, if you point out the research into cognitive biases and illusions, they'll just say, nope, that's not me. I don't do that. And maybe you can just never convince them otherwise. But, I mean, all you can do is point out that we are all subject to this. It's just the way our brains evolved. Just try and point it out. And yeah, maybe even if it doesn't convince them, it'll convince those around them. Yeah, I think that's all you can do. I mean, there's not going to be any kind of instant cure for conspiracy theories. I think if you can have an effect, then it's going to take a very long time.
Do you think that's... Do you think we should all be aware of it? And do you... This is going to be quite difficult, but do you... Are you aware of any biases of your own that you try have to overcome?
Of course, yeah. I can be biased, and sometimes I recognise that, and sometimes people have to point it out to me. And I mean, that's the thing. Because they're so inbuilt, sometimes you're just... You're subject to it, and you don't even realise it. But all you can do is try and educate yourself and educate those around you, and hopefully be a little bit more aware.
Is that something... I mean, we are broadcasting from university, after all, to mainly students. Is that something that will be a good message to give out to students in general? Be aware of your biases. Will it make their work better?
Absolutely, yeah. I think critical thinking skills like that should be taught much more widely than they are. Not even within the sciences, just to everyone, I think.
Yeah.
It's always a good thing to be aware of your own limitations.
And when you are aware of your own limitations, when someone points them out to you, you can accept them.
Yeah.
Even if, like me, it takes a couple of days of sticking your bottom lip out and stomping around like a child. Eventually you'll go, you know what?
Yeah, and to realise that it's not an attack on you, it's just pointing out that this is how we all are. But we don't have to be, we can overcome it.
Okay, I'm going to ask you the Dawkins test questions. Just a bit of fun. There was a comment after the interview with Chris French. Oh, it's silly, the Dawkins test. Absolutely right. That's why I'm doing it. It's not all serious here at the Skeptical Experience, you know. I do like to have a little giggle here and there. Okay, so, Dawkins test. You know the score. Number one means it's absolutely true. Number seven means it's absolute nonsense. Here we go. Ghosts.
6.9.
Alien visitations.
6.9.
Young Earth creationism.
7.
The effectiveness of dowsing.
6.9.
The modern Illuminati and their New World Order. I wonder.
I'd have to go with 6.9.
The ruling reptilian class.
I'll give that one 7.
Astrology.
7.
Homeopathy.
7.
The scientific method.
1.
God.
6.9.
Everyone says 6.9 in God. Do you think that's a healthy thing? That's a good thing? A genuine skeptic won't say there's definitely no God?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you have to go based on the evidence, and there is no evidence of God. But that doesn't mean there is no God, necessarily.
So, so that's a skeptical position to say. Yeah. Probably.
Yeah.
But, you know. and also, do you think that the good thing about a skeptical position is we are able, if someone brings that evidence in, to go, oh, yeah, I was wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people sometimes confuse skepticism with cynicism. Mm. And there's a world of difference. Skepticism is purely being open and being led by the evidence.
Yes, as someone I know called Aaron Ra on YouTube says, if you can't show it, you don't know it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So make your assertion, but please show it to us. Mm. Just that's what it's all about here.
Yeah, a final word on conspiracy theories. Okay. I would say we should live our lives and form our opinions based on what we can show to be true, not what we can't show to not be true.
And what if there's something that you can't show at all, that you don't know? Should you... It's fine to just say, I don't know.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. I'll go along with that. Okay. Rob, thank you very much for coming in. That's the show this week. And I'll see you all next week. If you catch the podcast, I'll see you all when you download the next one, when I get around to uploading it. So, thank you very much.
Cheers.